Hallo, hier ist Max Wetterauer vom Team des Bildungsplausch-Podcast. Bevor wir mit dieser Folge beginnen, ein paar Worte vorweg. Wir haben im Frühjahr diesen Jahres Material für die zweite Folge unseres Forschungspodcasts gesucht. Sie wissen ja, wir beginnen unsere Folgen immer mit dieser Rubrik Neues aus der Bildung. Das sind kurze Audioschnipse mit Neuigkeiten aus der Hochschule, mit Projekten, Forschung oder Infos über einzelne Mitglieder der Hochschule. Wir dachten ursprünglich, dass wir mit Mariana Natsiuk und Viktoria Osidak auch nur ein paar Schnipsel aufnehmen würden. Aber nachdem wir gut eine halbe Stunde mit ihnen gesprochen hatten, haben wir uns dazu entschlossen, das gesamte Interview als Sonderfolge zu veröffentlichen. Und das ist die Folge, die Sie nun hören. Für uns war das eine ganz besondere Aufnahme. Die Technik ist nicht immer perfekt und das Gespräch war auch weniger strukturiert als unsere anderen Interviews. Aber wir glauben, dass es richtig ist und dass es wichtig ist, den beiden für ihre Geschichte, ihre Message und natürlich auch ihre Forschung eine eigene Folge zu geben. Das wollten wir Ihnen einfach nicht vorenthalten. Dann würde ich sagen, los geht's mit der Folge.
Der Beginn des russischen Angriffskriegs gegen die Ukraine am 24. Februar 2022 hat nicht nur auf die Menschen vor Ort die bekannten, gravierenden und immer noch unfassbaren Folgen. Auch hat der Krieg die gesamte Scientific Community erschüttert. Die Pädagogische Hochschule Heidelberg hat sich deshalb kurz nach Kriegsausbruch zum Ziel gesetzt, ukrainischen Wissenschaftlerinnen zu helfen. Das sollte unbürokratisch und rasch geschehen. Mit Förderungen über Stipendien, über Erasmus-Plus-Projekte und mit einer Menge individueller Unterstützung der Hochschulmitglieder kamen drei ukrainische Wissenschaftlerinnen nach Heidelberg, um hier ihre Forschung in Sicherheit fortzusetzen. Mit Viktoria Osidak und Mariana Natsiuk haben wir heute zwei ukrainische Wissenschaftlerinnen hier im Bildungsplausch zu Gast. Das Gespräch mit ihnen führen wir auf Englisch.
Thank you so much for being here. Could you two maybe introduce yourself to our audience?
My name is Viktoria Osidak. I'm from Kyiv. Well, currently I am doing a research project here at Heidelberg University of Education, but I am originally a lecturer at Taras Shevchenko National University of Kyiv. I teach pre-service teachers how to become future teachers.
Thank you, Viktoria. Mariana, could you introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. I am Mariana Natsiuk. In Ukraine, I am a lecturer. I teach pre-service English teachers, and the courses which I teach are English as a second language and methodology, teaching English as a second language to pre-service teachers.
Thank you so much. So your field of expertise is mainly language and research about language learning as a second language. Could you explain to our audience a little bit more specific what your research is exactly about?
Here the topic is multilingual education, multilingualism, and we concentrate on the Ukrainian context. We started our research to find out multilingualism in the Ukrainian society, not in education, but we slowly moved to the direction of multilingualism in the foreign language teaching, actually what we are good at, what we are expert in.
So basically people multilingual, so people who speak more than one language.
Exactly.
Okay.
When we started researching the topic, I learned about myself that I am multilingual. I never thought about that. And literature shows that remarkably, but Ukrainians being at least bilingual from birth never acknowledge this. They never understand that being able to switch between the languages is a sign of multilingualism or bilingualism, because it naturally comes because of the environment. Our language policy also provides opportunity for all children to be to acquire proficiency in at least two more languages during school years. So by the end of school, we are expected to be at least partially fluent in four languages.
Four languages?
Yes.
Okay.
Ukrainian and Russian come naturally because of the environment. Mm-hmm. For the majority of us, Ukrainian is the mother tongue, but because of the social and historical processes, we are exposed from birth to Russian. That's why we acquire it naturally. And at school, we normally start with the English language as our first foreign language. And since fifth grade, all students also have the possibility to choose either between German, Spanish or French, probably mm-hmm. this, and also Polish, yes. Mm-hmm. These are mainly the languages that are commonly taught as foreign languages in the school environment. And why it's important for us is that we never used our students' repertoire of in other languages as a resource in the classroom. We always approach a language as an isolated phenomenon. And now, thanks to the opportunity that Heidelberg University of Education offered to us, I believe we can explore this field and come with conclusions that can, in general, benefit the methodology, how we teach languages in Ukraine in general.
Moreover, Ukraine is going to be a part of European Union, and it's quite logical to be able to communicate two foreign languages. Mm-hmm. That's why we think our research is, I would say, far going. It will bring us results probably in the future, but it's a step to be a part of European Union and European education.
You said you started researching at the Heidelberg University of Education. We said before in our introduction that there were several partner programs that enabled you to come here. Since you've been here, who did you research with? Did you have any, small groups that were building up and made some experiences, interesting experiences with this co-work?
Yes. We actually do have experience of co-working with Heidelberg professionals. I am proud to be honored to work with Karin Fogg, professor of English department before. We cooperated at the projects that also explored familiarity and expertise of Ukrainian university teachers in with the Common European Framework of Reference, and Karin Fogg was a supervisor in this project.
Yes, Karin Fogg is more than just an expert. She is an amazing personality, and we are very grateful to everything from personal relationship to high professional recommendations, pieces of advice she gave to us. Moreover, I came from the project Multi-Ed, and Professor Huneke was responsible for it. So we had contacts before, and now the project also was extended and it's still going on, and Professor Huneke is one of the person who is responsible and is doing it currently, so his help and his support is also significant for us in both terms, personal and scientific.
At this point, maybe a short notice for our audience. Karin Vogt was also at our podcast in the first season, talked about her research. So in case you are interested in listening to her research, feel free to check out our first season. Thank you so much for this inside look into your research. What's the next step for you? How do you want to continue your research?
We have lots of ideas how to continue with our research. We started with a background and then we slowly moved to developing a questionnaire which included all possible factors that can influence persons' multilingualism and also which should be included during teaching a language. Also, we want to include assessment or develop guidelines for multilingual assessment. And it's quite a new area of research, despite the fact that teaching multilingual students has been already for several decades in European society, at least. Multilingual assessment has hardly been researched in general and in the Ukrainian context in particular. So currently we are working at developing specific features of multilingual assessment. We are focusing in the direction of formal assessment and which should substitute at least partial summative assessment. And in general, there should be a shift in our understanding what how assessment can be effective in language learning.
One more aspect, we have developed the model of approaches, which we are going to discuss. We are going to have a roundtable discussion with the experts and present the model, which will be a part of the course we are talking. So like a final product, we see the course, which will introduce at our universities, where multilingual education will be initiated and launched, and teachers, pre-service teachers mostly, but also in-service teachers will shift their view how to teach foreign languages. Yes, and a model and approaches, at what level they function, this model is going to be very helpful. We think so.
So you still are in contact with your colleagues and the other teachers in the Ukraine. Are you talking with them, or how is this contact at the moment?
Yes. Of course, we are lecturers at the university. Here we are doing grant and internship. So all organizational moments, there are a lot of means how to communicate via emails, messengers, Moodle, and students. So if we are going to go on with our teaching, students who, for example, have to do their master paper have already contacted, for example, me. So we are part of Ukrainian universities, and communication is going quite well.
You've done research in Germany at the Heidelberg University of Education. You've done research in the Ukraine. What kind of differences do you see between those two systems of research and science?
So the main difference is that we have a different language policy in terms of preparing pre-service teachers. And it's our task to borrow expertise from other countries, how they cope with this how they introduce multilingualism if teachers have only one degree, for example, in a foreign language, if they specialize only in a foreign language. So this is quite a challenge and a difference.
But I just feel you can say that you really benefit from the international exchange in your research.
Sure.
We also have a great chance to communicate not only with German specialists, but this university offers us a lot of opportunities to meet people from all over the world. The USA, we were at the conference, DAD, international conference, then from Colombia, from Switzerland, very helpful and insightful information was gained by us. So this broadens our mind immensely. We see the world, we see how diverse it is, how education is different, and changes our view that not only this way is the right one, it could be many, many, many different other ways, and none of them is actually one and true and correct. So that's an unbelievable experience.
Besides your experience you made in your research and the cooperation with other international researchers, how did you find life in Germany, like from maybe your private experience, like how is life different in Germany from the one you had before in the Ukraine?
It is different. We came here at the moment when it was really horrible situation, and it is horrible situation in Ukraine. Here we found a peaceful place, we found a great support, which we are grateful for, to the Heidelberg University of Education, to all the staff. Everywhere we met support, we met people's understanding, so that's the biggest thing which is different. Well, not different, but what we appreciate the most.
I've been thinking, and I am not quite sure whether people or societies are different, because Ukraine has been a European society before war, and we are striving towards European standards like democracy, accepting diversity and otherness. Well, and that's why we believe that very much is alike. There are differences probably that we are more digitalized. Well, I mean it, well, when lots of things, we have like IDs in our mobile phones, lots of things can be done in a click, just applying, submitting, I mean this. But what I value the most is your openness, and I don't, your openness in general, your support and willingness to give help to people you don't know personally. And this is what we lack. I mean, despite all the advantages, this is something that should be like acknowledged, like a very big achievement of a democratic society. And it's a pity that our way to this willingness to help, to support people you don't know, to open your homes and doors, just because you know that someone is has got problem, it's something that we haven't achieved in every part. We are on our way. And well, it's obvious that you've lived through many years of understanding the diversity, and that you are already there, that everyone is different and different should be appreciated.
This is really touching our hearts, what you're saying.
Well, that's true, but I mean it.
Yeah. What you and the university have already done is a big support. We see it, we see it, we feel it at every step. At every moment, we understand how we are welcome here. That's not something that goes without saying, taken for granted. We appreciate it. We are thankful for that. So we are doing what we can. We are doing research. We are trying to be active and participate whenever people ask us. And it's our pleasure as well. If we can help and share, we will do this. And we are ready and we are willing to do this. So feel free to ask and invite us.
Thank you so much, Victoria and Mariana. I think you two are also a good example of how not only science can work together, but also people can help each other. Thank you so much for sharing your experience and also your research here in this podcast. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting.
Thank you and good luck.
Das war der Bildungsplausch. Wenn Sie sich mit Ihrer Frage des Monats beteiligen wollen, schreiben Sie uns gerne eine Mail an forschung@ph-heidelberg.de. Die Antwort auf Ihre Frage erhalten Sie dann in den nächsten Folgen des Bildungsplauschs. Oder besuchen Sie uns auf www.ph-heidelberg.de/bildungsplausch. Dort finden Sie auch unsere Kontaktdaten, wenn Sie Fragen, Kritik oder Anregungen zu unserem Podcast haben. Diese Folge wurde produziert von Birgitta Hohennester, Nicole Flint, Antonia Schnurrer und Max Wetterauer mit freundlicher Unterstützung des Rektorats der Hochschule. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören.